God is in this place.
Thank you.
guys. Thanks for all the service you give. Showing up and rehearsing again. Showing up early on Sundays, no matter what time we start. Thank you, guys. I don't know if you can see in Voices of Unity, but Reverend Robert Donald was an Ibsen. That's been part of his service. So this is kind of like there's a little faith on court. It's like, oh, Robert, will you come back out and do a little something for us? Okay, well, please do. Please come and point your vision. Thank you for saying yes. And for all of you, all of you, all the service you've had, and for all you've done, and for all you've done. Thank you.
Thank you. My water.
You want to get my hat away? You were just early for the love of time.
We're good.
Switch.
Always. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
It is amazing to be back here with you live, Reverend Robert Yarnell. I counted, this is my 11th talk at Union New York, but only my second one live.
Oh, wow.
Crazy. My second time was supposed to be Sunday, March 15th, 2020. So that didn't happen. And it is thrilling to be here with you, to share that silence, to be in our physical space together, and to everyone online, we're so glad to have you here as well. Perhaps some of you remember that 2.5 years ago, I gave a talk called Women, Love, and Power that looked at the divine feminine and a new way of perceiving power in the world. So, today, I want to look at what you might call the flip side of that. A new way to perceive masculinity in the world. It's particularly relevant right now in our country as we seem to be debating what it means in modern America to be a man. We live in a time of rapidly shifting gender roles and a grand reimagination of God in places like New York. Here, we see God as a power and presence, and God's pronouns are he, she, and it. After all, we're created in God's likeness. It follows that God is not limited by any gender, but it is all of us and all of our gendered and non-gendered beauty. So, it might seem odd in Unity to have a talk focused on God the Father, which feels even to me somewhat old-fashioned. Think of the Sistine Chapel or the angry tyrant that we read about. But one of the things I love about Unity is that we revitalize traditional concepts and words, scripture, and the meaning of Jesus' time here on earth and beyond. We don't throw it all out. We look at it in new ways, allowing us to see deeper meanings within ancient concepts, meanings hiding in plain sight. There's great value, I think, in reinvigorating sometimes stale and rigid concepts. Learning to breathe back life into them for our modern ears and for our living experience. So today I will be shining a spotlight on the language of God the Father, that we may be moving toward an understanding of God beyond such gendered words. It can be helpful right now to meet ourselves where we are as a culture and nudge us a bit forward. And God the Father is still quite dominant. Even here in Unity, sometimes when we sing the other opening song, God needs us to shine. I still hear sometimes people say his light. The original lyric, it's great if you want to say that, but the original lyric is its light. So even here in Unity, we sometimes default to thinking, God is a man. Not necessarily. So let's look first at fatherhood today. As an institution, it is changing rapidly and seems to be on shaky ground, according to a study in 2022. While just 6% of American respondents reported estrangement from their mothers, an astonishing 26% of respondents reported estrangement from their fathers, over four times as many. According to the most recent US Census, one in four children live without a father, and the average school-age boy spends only about 30 minutes per week in one-on-one conversation with his father. For comparison, the same boy, on average, will spend more than 40 hours per week watching television, playing video games, surfing the internet. And for teenagers, it's closer to 60 hours per week. 30 minutes, 60 hours. So what is going on with fathers? And what's going on with men, especially in this country? In her brand new book, Boy Mom, Ruth Whitman says there's a yearning in boys and men for emotional connections, intimacy, and deep friendships, but no idea how to get them. There are virtually no stories for boys where relationships are the primary focus. Instead, we get adventures, problem solving, conquering, etc. So boys are taught never to discuss feelings or personal struggles, but rather sports or favorite movies or politics or facts. We are taught to devalue intimacy. We reinforce this in very subtle ways. She points out that when she dropped her boy off for his first day of kindergarten, the male teacher greeted each girl with, "Hi, sweetheart," and each boy with, "Hey, buddy." An octave down with a fist bump. Now consider the difference between those two greetings and what they imply to a kindergartner. You have to be carefully taught. Apparently, at least unconsciously, we don't want to associate boys with sweetness, hearts. A buddy is someone you pal around with. A sweetheart is someone quite intimate. She points out, quote, "Most popular feminist writing has focused heavily on how boys and men benefit from patriarchy, but less on how they are harmed by it, what they lose in terms of care and nurturing, emotion, and connection. Of course, in order to register this as an actual loss, we need to truly believe that these things are worth having in the first place, to value emotional intimacy not as a nice-to-have add-on or fine for girls, but as something weighty and significant enough to be seen as aspirational for boys and men. This would require attaching real importance to the behavior and cultural norms of women." The logic easily starts to collapse in on itself. As a society, we tend to assign a higher cultural value to male concerns and trivialize those associated with girls and women. This gendered hierarchy means, in turn, that we tend to overvalue power and undervalue intimacy and the expression of emotions. Girl power is an aspirational slogan. It's hard to imagine much demand for boy nurture t-shirts. Isn't that great? The Ruth Whitman. Now, I found that not only profound, but incredibly sad. 79% of suicides in this country are men. Men are 2 to 3 times more likely to die from drug overdose than women. Men commit 80% of the violent crimes in America. We are suffering as a country and as a species, I would say, because of male misery and the lack of emotional intelligence among men only makes it worse. So maybe, rather than focusing on smashing the patriarchy, Whitman suggests, we might want to focus on what men could gain in this cultural shift. She says it's an opportunity to become more fully human, and I agree. Last month, you may all remember this, we saw 17-year-old Gus Walls openly bawling, pointing with pride to the stage, saying, "That's mine." And this led to much debate in our popular culture. But there was one very insightful take on this episode on Facebook. I actually saw on Steve Houck's page. This is not his quote, but it was on his page. This is also what dismantling the patriarchy looks like, creating safe and nurturing spaces for boys to cry, to feel, and to express love, to not only witness it, but to also celebrate it. I love that. It's like to be all that we can be, like the army used to say. Or in Jesus' words, to have life and have it abundantly. And I personally have to thank my enlightened mother for bringing me and my brothers up with a celebration of that full emotional palette. I'm quite fortunate and grateful again to my mother that I grew up with two fathers. The first, my biological father, and years later, a second father. Some say stepfather. I say second father. My first father grew up in the 1940s and 50s, in a time when men in this country were very traditional and were expected to provide for their family, period. Now, he certainly rebelled against many of the norms of his time, but he admitted later, after I had done a lot of therapy and softened toward him, that he wished he'd been able to be more present for me and my brothers when we were growing up, but that in his time, a man was just expected to work. And that's what he did. And he was a doctor, often on call or away at medical conferences, so our family time was absolutely precious to me. He provided for us, and I am eternally grateful for that, as I now know many people who did not have that or anything close to it. But he acknowledged he was not as present. Now, when I was 9, my parents got divorced, and as heartbreaking as that was for me and for all of us, I could see later that it was actually necessary. Still, it took a while for me to heal, to not blame him or resent him, and to love those parts of me that are like him. Remember, love your enemies means internal ones as well, those shadow parts of us we've disowned as unsafe. Don't be like Dad. Now, when I was 13, I got a second father, who was and is very different. He spent quality time with each boy every day doing what we chose. He was present and loving and funny and strong and also sensitive. Only now do I appreciate what a wonderful father he was and is. It was confusing at times, having two dads, but the emotional security I now received was like nutritious soil. You don't realize until later how vital it was for your growth. Still, there was a longing to have Dad one notice me, approve of me, and want to spend time with me. And as I said, after much therapy, my softening and his opening up, we developed a closer relationship in my 30s and 40s. I became able to respond more as a fellow human being, not only as his son, to be present and not just stuck in the past. That allowed peace in me and between us and joy to emerge in the time that we share. I now value qualities I got from each father and realize I needed both of them for my journey of life. So, why, you might ask, am I telling you about my journey with two fathers? Well, because I now realize that I lived a reimagining of what fatherhood could be. And that may have expanded my notion of what God the Father could mean. It's not charged with negativity for me. I'm aware that for many, if not most people, traditional fatherhood has been their experience, and may have provided many things like security and humor, but perhaps a very narrow emotional palette and tone. Many others had no father at all in their life, and so the notion conjures up abandonment and absence. Now, if any of that relates to your experience, God as Father might be a tough sell. But stay tuned. This gets interesting. Allow me to set the stage with a man known as Jesus of Nazareth. Let me set the stage for Jesus of Nazareth. Because before him, right, in ancient Judaism, the straitjacket of fatherhood was quite strong. Fathers back then in ancient Israel had absolute authority over the household and were referred to as lord or master. At one time, they could put children to death or sell them into slavery. This level of absolute power over their realm provided them a useful metaphor for God, who had absolute authority over his realm and children too. So the Hebrew Bible consistently posits God as a man, as our father. And remember too that before modern times, a common belief was that life came from men and that women were the incubators, so to speak. So similarly, God would create life and place it onto Mother Earth, the holder of life, the womb, where life matures. That was the understanding, and those were the roles back then. So Jesus came into that specific world and taught people who were raised with those views of fatherhood and God. But what I find amazing is what he did to radically reimagine it all. To appreciate this fully, let's first look at Jesus' experience with his earthly dad and how that might have influenced him and his theology. Buckle your seatbelts. Consider this. Neither Mary nor Joseph is mentioned in any of Paul's letters, the earliest written documents in the New Testament. In Mark, which was the first gospel written, Jesus' mother is barely mentioned, and there's no mention of Joseph. Now compare these two similar verses. When referring to Jesus, Mark 6:3 says, "Is this not the carpenter, the son of Mary?" But Matthew 13:55 says, "Is this not the carpenter's son, his mother called Mary?" You hear that difference?
Yeah.
Is this not the carpenter? In the first one, is this not the carpenter's son? In the second one. Now, some of you may remember listening to Bishop Spong, John Shelby Spong, when he brilliantly laid out his theory that Joseph was an invention of Matthew, echoed by Luke for literary and symbolic purposes. So it's quite possible that Jesus grew up fatherless. Even traditionalists who do believe in a literal Joseph often explain his absence from the rest of the story by suggesting Joseph was old, died early in Jesus' life. Well, to me, that kind of recontextualizes all of his references to God as Father. It was perhaps someone he longed for, a dreamlike figure, an idealized dad who was always present and is thrilled exist. Like the father in the prodigal son who's so happy to see his son returning that he runs toward him. Some of you may remember Reverend Paul telling us back then, men did not run. It was not dignified. But this father is overcome by his love and can't help himself. You can almost hear the crowds gasping at this new vision of who God could be. Neither the stern Jewish father figure nor the absent dad, but a fully present and overwhelmingly loving one. He was reimagining God as comforter, as loving and strong and generous and everything people might yearn for from a dad. And remember that stat from earlier, how many people even today feel estranged from their father, and you begin to understand the power of this framing. Now, look at the picture of God that Jesus paints for us and the life that Jesus suggests we live. In John 15, 9 through 15, as translated in the Message, Jesus says, "I've loved you the way my Father has loved me. Make yourselves at home in my love. If you keep my commands, you'll remain intimately at home in my love." That's what I've done, kept my Father's commands and made myself at home in his love. I've told you these things for a purpose, that my joy might be your joy and your joy wholly mature. This is my command. Love one another the way I loved you. This is the very best for the month. That's it. That's the command. This is a different view of God and of what's important for all of us, including men. This is not at all about anger and domination and winning and proving ourselves or any of the other problematic things we might associate with men. And remember that after the Sermon on the Mount, where he tells people to love their enemies, to forgive their brother, to practice radical nonviolence and love wastefully, as Bishop Spong used to say, after all of that, toward the end of Matthew's Gospel in Matthew 25, he tells his disciples, the way into heaven, into the kingdom that they long to inhabit, is to treat everyone the way you treat him. To see everyone as him and treat them accordingly. So, everyone back then was thinking the kingdom is going to be a military victory over the Romans. The Messiah conquering the oppressors, and he says, no. It's here. And now, and about radical love, acting like the best God you can imagine. It's about relationship, and it's full of joy. What Jesus suggests is, in other words, intimate stuff. The kind of things you don't see much in stories for men. He offered a radically non-patriarchal treatise, a paradigm shift away from the typical male take on everything. And I think he's a way shower for how to be fully alive, how to be an amazing person, and yes, how to be an amazing, awesome man. Women, he knew, were doing all right. They were funding his ministry. It's actually said in the Bible. Women funded his ministry. They were the first to see him at the tomb. But I think, even then, he knew he had a special challenge with men and getting us to embrace love. So, he artfully took the concept of God as stern and powerful Father and reimagined him and power itself as endless love and intimacy. He artfully took the concept of kingdom of God and the military conquest of territory and reimagined it as a radically new state of being that we all share, with overwhelming love and generosity and forgiveness and nonviolence as the way in. That was a big shift of consciousness back then, especially for men. And it remains radical even today. Almost 2,000 years later, Martin Luther King was called radical for preaching nonviolence and suggesting that we have a tough mind tender heart. Love that. Now, as I conclude, one of the reasons I've not spoken today about God as mother is, quite frankly, I don't want to let men off the hook. As if to say caring and nurturing and emotions are the realm of mom. Now, I want to live into a world with a broader expression for men, where we can imagine those qualities as essential elements of ourselves and of our God. And I hope and trust that women, even after some of the things we've done, want all of that for us as well. Because then we are better fathers and partners, better collaborators and friends and citizens. We can reimagine what fatherhood is, what masculinity is, and what God can be. I've spoken today about God the Father, and I hope those words mean more to you now than they did before, more than the Sistine Chapel version or the Angry Tyrant. Eventually, perhaps, those words become less important than the experience of our oneness, a vital embrace of the whole human family, children, mother, and father. And as we move into our full humanity, we become like that father in the prodigal son, not caring what anyone may have done in the past, but rather so overjoyed when we see them that we imagine ourselves like God, running toward them in love. Thank you.